Penguin Random House Audio presents Let's Get Physical, How Women Discovered Exercise and Reshaped the World. This is the author, Danielle Friedman. To Daniel and Sam for putting a spring in my step and moving me beyond words. To Jackie and Juliet for lifting me up. And to my parents, Richard and Karen, for everything. A movement is only composed of people moving. To feel its warmth and motion around us is the end as well as the means. Gloria Steinem, Moving Beyond Words. Exercise gives you endorphins. Endorphins make you happy. Happy people just don't shoot their husbands. Elle Woods, Legally Blonde. Introduction. Sweat. 5 years ago, I walked into a Pure Barre studio for the most predictable of reasons. I was getting married. In a few months, I would be wearing a strapless lace gown in a hotel ballroom in my childhood hometown of Atlanta. For one night, I would be in a literal spotlight. I was marrying a wonderful man, and I had spent my career as a journalist making the case that women should be valued for their inner selves and not their appearance. But weddings have a way of stirring up our most basic desires, and even feminists sometimes fantasize about greeting the world with a flat stomach and firm arms. My local bar studio on Manhattan's Upper East Side promised, in loopy letters on a sidewalk chalkboard, to LTB, Lift, Tone, Burn, my then 35-year-old body into that of a ballerina, sounded highly improbable and completely perfect. I was drawn to the studio in the same way I'd been drawn to my high school's cheerleading squad, desperate to join, but doubtful in some core teen girl way that I belonged, or that I wanted to belong. This time, though, going for it wouldn't mean attempting a sad split in front of the popular girls, or giving up Model UN. So I slipped into the boutique fitness uniform of moisture-wicking everything, handed over my credit card, and swallowed hard. When the class began, a ponytailed instructor wearing a headset microphone ushered me and a dozen other women to a ballet bar, where we moved our thighs up an inch, down an inch, until our muscles trembled. On cue, I squeezed my seat, bar speak for butt, until it spasmed, and planked until I thought I might pass out. When I looked around the room, every other woman was stone-faced in her Lululemon. Would one of them catch me if I collapsed mid-squat? For the last few minutes, we lay on our backs and thrust our pelvises to a stripped-down version of Rihanna's Umbrella. At the end, I didn't die of embarrassment or exhaustion. I felt fantastic. So I went back, again and again. The workout made me strong in parts of my body I hadn't realized were weak. It allowed me, for the first time in my life, to carry grocery bags without stopping to rest after 3 minutes. I didn't look like a ballerina, but I felt like one. Light on my feet, energized, connected with my body in a totally new way. I came to understand that the other women in class weren't unfriendly, but intensely focused, in the one space where they had to focus only on themselves. I, too, developed a resting bar face. A few months into my new Pure Barre routine, I became curious. Where did the bar workout, which had become a phenomenon and multi-billion-dollar industry in this country, come from? One internet rabbit hole led to another, and I discovered an origin story far richer than I was expecting. What had once seemed like a familiar rite of passage suddenly took on the feeling of a mystery waiting to be uncovered. The workout was created in 1959 by Lottie Burke, a free love revolutionary and former dancer who wanted to help women improve their sex lives. This explained why many of the exercises in class felt comically erotic, from pelvic tucks to a move called knee dancing. Almost as radical at the time, Burke encouraged women to use exercise to strengthen their body, to create a corset of muscle. Her London studio was one of the first ever boutique fitness studios, and she attracted a celebrity clientele of actresses, writers, and on one occasion, Barbara Streisand, who allegedly never removed her hat. I wrote about this history in a feature for New York Magazine's The Cut, titled The Secret Sexual History of the Bar Workout, and the story went viral. Few of the workout's devotees, including studio owners and instructors, knew about its roots. Some were scandalized, while others were delighted. For me, however, researching the piece opened my eyes to more than one workout's wild origins. It felt like unlocking a portal to a hidden feminist history. While fitness culture today can feel sleek and sometimes sterile, the story of how women's exercise developed in the 20th century until now, I discovered, is weird and messy and awkward and glamorous. It's rich with cinematic characters and forgotten pioneers of what we now call self-care. But more than that, it's the story of a paradigm shift in the way women, so long accepted as the weaker sex, came to view their bodies. Because when women first began exercising en masse, they were participating in something subversive, the cultivation of physical strength and autonomy. Today, I exercise for energy, for strength, and for my mental health. I exercise to feel the endorphin high of accomplishment and to manage life's lows. I exercise to remind myself I can persevere. And I am not alone. Most of the women I know, as well as the many women across the country I interviewed for this book, consider regular physical activity essential to their emotional and physical well-being. My mom, who is in her early 70s, calls her weekly cardio dance classes a surefire source of joy. Before the coronavirus pandemic, some 73 million Americans belonged to at least one gym, studio, or health club. The pandemic shook the fitness industry, forcing nearly 20% of brick-and-mortar spaces to permanently close. But it also led to a dramatic rise in home exercise. By mid-2020, more than 80% of fitness consumers had live-streamed workouts, compared with only 7% before the global lockdown began. For many, amid so much unthinkable tragedy, the pandemic brought a newfound appreciation for what their bodies could do, beyond how their bodies looked. Women's desire to test their strength and endurance through exercise is now widely accepted in this country. But until relatively recently, the premise that an average woman would regularly break a sweat in the name of health, or even beauty or weight loss, would have shocked most Americans. Throughout the first half of the 20th century, sweating was considered unladylike, and women tried to hide their muscles under sleeves. While women's beauty guides advised that gentle calisthenics could help correct a woman's figure faults, doctors cautioned against vigorous exercise, warning it would lead to exhaustion or make a woman's uterus literally fall out. Until the early 1970s, common wisdom held it was dangerous for women to run more than a couple of miles at a time, a justification for banning women from road races. The average woman exercised so little for so long, the sports bra wasn't invented until 1977. All hail inventors Lisa Lindahl, Hinda Miller, and Polly Smith. But while much has been written about how the rise of women's sports has empowered women, the role of women's fitness in shaping our collective pursuit of strength has largely slipped under the historical radar. This, despite the fact that most women stop playing organized sports when they graduate from high school or college, whereas many exercise for a lifetime. When popular media have explored the historical significance of women's fitness culture, they have mostly treated it as a collection of disparate fads with little impact on women's lives or society at large. It is often covered as kitsch, reminders of a past that women would just as soon forget, from vibrating belts that promise to eviscerate fat to neon leg warmers. We can always find reasons to laugh at the choices made by our younger, less wise selves or forebears. Thong leotards, really? But this popular treatment also surely stems from the fact that we live in a culture that diminishes women's interests as silly and trivial. Dismissing the things women say they love as inconsequential allows our culture to stealthily ensure women remain subordinate to men. American women's fitness history is more than a series of misguided crazes. It's the story of how women have chosen to spend a collective billions of dollars and hours in pursuit of health and happiness. In many ways, it's the story of what it has meant to be a woman over the past seven decades. For much of the 20th century, most women didn't move very much. They grew up being told they were physically limited. For centuries, women have been shackled to a perception of themselves as weak and ineffectual, call it Dowling writes in The Frailty.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?